Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Nau mai, haere mai. I'm John McDonald. Kia ora and welcome into the Community Drive Hut Zone on Thursday the 23rd of July. The Hut Zone is Wellington Access Radio's weekly look into the stories, people, history, poems and music that make the Hutt Valley community. Tonight, it's pretty much all about Lower Hutt music. I chat to the historian behind the latest New Zealand music map, Chris Burke from Audio Culture, and we take a travel around the music map and sample some of the Lower Hutt music associated with this online trail. We have plenty of music in the trail, including Going Out with Eddie O'Stranger's classic 1983 song Video Dodo. Let's start with poems from an Eastern Bays poet who gave an extended reading as part of the Nelson Arts Festival Puka Puka Talks in 2022.
Kia ora tātou. My name's Maggie Rainey Smith. I was born in Richmond, Nelson. I grew up there in the 50s and 60s, grew up in Waverley Street, born in Hillcrest Hospital at the top of Waverley Street. It's my great pleasure to be invited to be part of the Nelson Festival Digital Puka Puka Talks with the theme of belonging. I'm reading from my very first poetry collection, Formica, which came out this year. These poems are informed by my early, or the first half of the poetry book is informed by my time as a growing up in Richmond. Okay, this poem, Changing Course, is when I went back to Richmond to explore the new cycle tracks. Changing course. I worry we'll be lost in the forest of crying pines. I want to find the sea to reach the beach. You say, trust me, but I don't. We argue, sand in my throat. I want to claim the dunes, the bathing shed, the outside shower. I know exactly where Auntie parked her car, under this tree. Over here where Uncle swam nude at night alone. Where the men from Taiwan caught the crabs. Where we built a fire with your father, cooked snarlers, drank wine. And how silly I looked in my cutaway togs with my waxed, bruised thighs. We're going forward. I can no longer claim to have lain on that bank in my bikini. And they've moved the herons too, so we can cycle through to Richmond close to the road, where we waited by the mouth to the sea on school mornings with our net and a milk bottle for the whitebait. Where's the scout hall, the footbridge, the rubbish dump, the catch in the back of my throat, freshly killed meat smell? All my secret roads are gone and our rivers changed course. The next poem is an ode to Richmond. It's called Where Were You, Remembering Richmond. I too sat in Noel's barber shop with my siblings for a haircut high up in the swivel chair. Although my hair has now turned grey, I recall the shape of my cut to this day, the nape of my neck exposed. A cowlick caused the problem. My fringe could not be restrained, but the feel of the clippers I do not regret. I drank milkshakes in the tea kiosk through many a paper straw. Often so quickly, my head was sore. I queued at the War Memorial for the Saturday matinee on sunny afternoons, but my friends were not allowed. I was called out of class to the murder house mid-lesson to face the consequences of too many toffee bars at half-time, the slow, sweet decay that I've paid for to this day. I remember Richmond drapery, cinnamon, seamless hosiery, the smell of bolts of cloth. Was it you and me who lay on the hot asphalt by the school pool, peeing our maps of the world? Was it you or me drinking Kona coffee, candles dripping wax from empty wine bottles? Were you there? I climbed those blue hills with my lover, lay in those grasses upon which the flash new subdivisions grew. Valhalla seemed grandiose for a working class suburb, but the mall put paid to all of that. "There's a mall," my mother wrote to me on a flimsy blue aerogram to my flat in Shepherd's Bush. We all had our school feet measured at Taylor's at one time or another, secretly longing for patent leather. Herb was the chemist who carefully dispensed the avalanche of post-war Valium and sedatives to everyone. And everyone was married at one time or another at the Church of the Holy Trinity on the hill, except us Catholics, who of course required a papal dispensation if we were wishing to deviate. I too was there each Anzac and many after that in the bright light of autumn. Where were you? Thank you.
I'm John McDonald, and you're in the Hut Zone on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And that was Eastern Bay's Maggie Rainey Smith sharing her poetry in 2022 as part of the Nelson Arts Festival. Next, a musical feature story for the week. Audio culture Iwi Waiata has been collating music trails around New Zealand, and recently they contacted us to let us know the Lower Hutt music map is now published on the internet. I took the trail and learnt a lot and got plenty of more music ideas for the Hutt Zone. And I arranged a chat with a historian behind the map to hear about some of its highlights.
Chris Burke of Audio Culture, here to talk about the Lower Hutt music map. A music map opens up the locations where music has taken place that mean a lot to the local community and maybe even have gone nationally as important places where music has been created in New Zealand.
The period of time that the Lower Hutt music map covers, what periods are we talking?
We go up to the present day, really, with things like Lord Echo and Disaster Radio. That's Luke Rowell. So that goes right up to the present day. But I think the earliest, I talk about a fellow called Lou Arnold, who ran a very popular music teaching operation. I found a lovely advertisement for Lou Arnold, and so I thought I'd include that, and because he taught several generations himself. So this is what I love about the music history, is the way that the baton is passed from one generation to the next. You know, you'll find that someone who's a great saxophonist, his father might have been in brass bands, or there might have been an early rock and roll band of someone whose grandchild is now performing. Actually, the latest one is, I think, Vera Ellen, who is from Nainai. So, you know, and there's a wonderful history of Nainai and Taita of music making around that area, because there were so many teenagers in the baby boom era when all the beat bands were starting. They needed youth clubs to gather in so they could entertain themselves without getting in trouble. So the youth clubs were really encouraged, and they had a lot of bands. And I know people who have told me that in the 60s they would come out from Wellington, because the bands in the dance halls and the bands were much hipper than what was going on in Wellington. Maybe that was an age thing too.
Certainly, that's what struck me, is the community halls all throughout the hut really were pretty key to the place, weren't they?
Yeah. And particularly that Taita community hall, which is still there, and the historic background to this. I mean, I like it to be real history, but also a lot of fun. That's what I want to convey. You learn of all this rich music that's taken place where you now live, but not to be too earnest, you know, to have a bit of fun with it. But there's the Taita Community Hall, which is still there, and I found some footage from the late 50s of teenagers dancing to rock and roll bands there, and they did lots of other things like judo and darts and you name it. But there's this footage from an old newsreel about the Taita Community Hall. And the reason that really got off the ground is because of this famous thing called the Mazengarb Report that took place in 1954, just before rock and roll arrived. There was a report of juvenile delinquency taking place amongst Lower Hutt teenagers, Hutt Valley teenagers. And the government really got onto this and had a commission of inquiry. And this report was delivered to every household in the country about what teenagers were getting up to and what society could do about it. And one of the ideas was to have these youth clubs where they could have their own fun, but, you know, be supervised rather than get in trouble on the banks of the Hutt River.
On Sunday afternoons in the winter months, teenagers of the Hutt Valley Youth Club go to the Taita Community Hall. Already in its fifth year, the club has 600 members and many more want to join. But dancing's not all. The club committee plan different programs each week. With help from Betty Smith, the secretary, Bert Robinson, who started the club, finds plenty to interest young people. Bert usually referees team games like cornerball and beanbag hockey, but there's badminton and netball too. Some boys wanted to wrestle, so the club bought them mats and gave them a referee to make sure it wasn't all in. Yet anything from fashion shows to high fidelity is found to interest. And they like most music and dancing if it's got some life in it. Whether Scots or skiffle, music plays an important part in club life. Money from the government and city council helped them buy sports equipment. Now they look forward to Sunday afternoons and they're proud of their club. Parents are encouraged to take an interest in club activity and may watch if they wish. And if Dad doesn't like rock and roll, well, these kids never cared much for the Lancers either. Hard work and 18 committee members make things run smoothly. From humble beginnings through difficult times, sheer enthusiasm is making an interesting experiment succeed.
Annapooney Hall also gets a mention along with Taita.
Yeah, I remember being in a drama group in Annapooney Hall at some point in my childhood. Yeah, there was a gig there. Again, it's related to Luke Rowell, his brother, put on some gigs there. I think they were post-punk gigs. You know, Hillary Court, Nine Eye, I've got Vera Ellen pinpointed there, but it's worth putting across the idea that, you know, Nine Eye was a really planned community around this pedestrian courtyard. And, you know, one of the best architects in New Zealand designed that. And it all worked really well in the first few decades because people didn't have cars, so they'd, you know, be able to walk to the mall and not be harassed by motor vehicles or have to look for a park. Commuters would get off the train there and at Nine Eye. They could go to the supermarket. They could go to the Regent Picture Theatre there. And the Olympic swimming pool. I mean, you know, what a wonderful facility they had. It was an ideal community at that time. The map also talks about how things have changed, you know, how High Street in Lower Hutt is no longer the hub that it used to be. You know, it's I think it will bounce back someday. You know, there's too much real estate tied up there to not make proper use of it. It's also inspired Luke Rowell of Disaster Radio to create music that's about nostalgia for the 80s. The whole Hutt Valley community, you know, like everywhere, just keeps changing. So the hut that I grew up with is now, you know, almost unrecognisable. You know, Petone, you had all these big businesses like Gear Meat. I bring a lot of personal anecdotes into it as well. And I remember working at Gear Meat as a student the summer that John Stevens had his big hits, Montego Bay and Jezebel. And, you know, there would have been 1,000 freezing workers in the chain on the chain where I was working. And whenever one of those songs came up on the radio, the whole place would start singing along and dancing. You know, all these freezing workers dressed in white with hair nets and white gumboots on. And, you know, a lot of people there are 20 stone, you know, and it was just, they just threw themselves into it. It was fantastic. Now, of course, John Stevens came from Upper Hutt.
He did indeed.
So, you know, I can't claim that's a Lower Hutt story for me, but it's not John Stevens' story. You know, we'll get to Upper Hutt. So it's about bringing pride to an idea of what your community has offered creative arts in New Zealand. You know, the idea is, well, if this came from here, well, I can do something too, you know, to inspire future generations.
Avalon features quite a bit as well in your research.
Yeah, well, Avalon, it's funny to think of Avalon being, it was such a hub once that television studio went in there. And from 75, this tower in the middle of all this flat land. And so all the TV people had to commute out from Wellington to work there. You know, they had a regular van that went out from Broadcasting House in Wellington to take workers out to Avalon. And a lot settled in Eastbourne in the late 70s. There were quite a few television people out here, and including Sam Neill lived in Eastbourne. So Avalon, there you've got for, let's see, it was a good, well over a decade, you had the two biggest music programs coming out of Avalon, Ready to Roll and Radio Pictures, you know, and the whole country would stop and watch those. You know, if you're a young person into music, that was appointment viewing, especially Ready to Roll just before the news on a Saturday night. You'd find out what the countdown was.
Well, the countdown was indeed, yep. And they'd always play number one. They wouldn't always do the other ones, but they'd always do number one. I remember that, yeah.
And, you know, there we go, from Avalon to the nation. Pretty funny when you think about it now, and everything is so Auckland-based these days.
Now, you also talked about the New Faces 1972 TV series, because there was quite a few Hutt names featuring in that program.
Yeah, two, that's right, two key names. One beat the other. The name that people remember, especially from New Faces, is Shona Lang, who came from Days Bay and went to Hutt Valley High School. But the person who beat her in the New Faces that year was Steve Gilpin, who came from Taita and went to St Bernard's. In the early 60s, Steve Gilpin went on to be the lead singer of My Sex. But, Shona, because she was so young and, you know, she'd written her own song for that series, 1905, that was forever remembered as one of Studio One New Faces' big successes. Of course, that wasn't an Avalon That was 3 years before Avalon got made. Television was based in an old Edwardian building on Waring Taylor Street in the city. That I especially remember when Shona Lang turned up, because the night she was first on the television, my dad was having a poker night with his mates. He'd have a regular poker night with some key Lower Hutt identities. Bill Clark, who was in the All Blacks of 56, he was one of the quartet, and Malcolm Dunphy was a very funny lawyer from Lower Hutt, and Graham White, who was a music teacher at Hutt High. So I remember opening the door to him when he was turning up for this poker session, and he said, "Oh, come and get me when New Faces starts, because there's this girl from Hutt High that I want to see. She's on tonight." And so, you know, I love that, you know, all of us have these personal stories.
Now, was Steve Gilpin the one that was on Edio Strange's record label?
Very, very early he was. Yeah, yeah. He had a single already out, I think, when Studio One was on. But then later that decade, swapped the bow tie cabaret circuit for new wave rock and roll with MySex and computer games. He had, you know, was already well known when he joined MySex and had the sort of career shift.
I mean, Edio Strange is like a life member of Wellington Access Radio, so he's
is he
very closely associated with our radio station.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's give a shout out to Eddie, because he was involved in so many things that have lasted. I did write to Eddie about it. I was umming and ahhing whether to put Chloe of Wainui Mata in there, because of course she released a single on Eddie's label, but instead I got Moo. Who went to Moo of Fat Freddy's Drop, went to Glendale Primary, and that's where more recently Camper Low festivals have happened at the Brookfield camp there. And Jenny Morris taught at Wainui Mata College for a year or two, just when her career was getting started.
You mentioned cabarets before, and of course Claridge's Cabaret features in Central Lower Hutt in your research as well.
Yeah, well, that was had a very high profile when I was growing up. I wasn't old enough to go to it, but you know, it was advertised in the Hutt News every week and in the Evening Post. And Jack Claridge, when I did my research for Blue Smoke, Jack Claridge was a key member of the Wellington Jazz Fraternity after the war and through the 50s and 60s. So it was really good to be able to mention that and just give an idea of, you know, he was a humming upmarket venue right on the corner of High Street near where Hallenstein's used to be. And Jack is still alive. He's about to turn 101, I believe. He retired to Tauranga quite a few years ago. But yeah, Claridge's Cabaret by Candlelight, it was
big. It was the place to go for special occasions, that's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And speaking of institutions, you have the Genesis Music Store down in Central Hutt as well.
That's right. Well, this Genesis was one of the main shops that sold records before EMI started their record store across the road on High Street. And Genesis also sold musical instruments and other appliances. There were other record stores like Tiffany's. Colin Morris managed Tiffany's, which was near the bus terminal, which, you know, Queensgate is now, well, it's still the bus terminal, but, you know, that's where all the buses used to leave from, was over near Queensgate, and that's where Tiffany's was. Silvio's, the second-hand record store, had a branch opposite Hallenstein's. And more recent times, you've got things like Wonderland Records, which is still operates, I think, out of Wainui Mata. But for an independent record store, you've got to go to Jackson Street and Petone for two low-cost records, which is, you know, quite an institution. People make a trek, you know, they make it a destination. People are really collecting secondhand vinyl. Low Cost is one of the best in the region. There's really just them and Slowboat are the two leading secondhand record stores these days.
And you do mention EMI in a few places around the Hutt. Yeah, they were pretty active in their time.
Well, that's it. You know, we talk about Avalon and having Ready to Roll and Ready to Pictures, you know, beaming out to the nation. Well, EMI was the biggest record company in the country. And it was from 1973 on, it was all based in Alicetown on the Hutt Road, and around the corner in Wakefield Street was where the studio was. So for quite a few years, Lower Hutt was the hub of the record industry. But like so many things, the companies all get dragged north, move their head offices up to Auckland, you know, just like what happened to all the big Dunedin companies. You know, they got dragged to Wellington and then Auckland, the big, you know, from the gold rush days. Just the economy has moved north. So, yeah, there was the studio on Wakefield Street near Ava Station, and that's where people like Rocking Horse recorded the big hits of Mark Williams. Oh, Mark Williams, we got a nice response from Mark Williams because I've mentioned that the Days Bay Tennis Courts is where one of his album covers was taken, a very arty shot of the Days Bay Tennis Courts. And in amongst the people in that photo is Sam Neill, whose girlfriend was working for EMI at the time. So that's a funny connection to this week. Mark was really pleased to be reminded of that.
And then there's also a lot of outdoor events that the Hutt could boast, including the Hutt Rec was a pretty important performance ground.
Yeah, well, I don't remember as a child having gigs at the Hutt Rec, but of course there's been big gigs in recent years, Jimmy Barnes, and more recently, you know, huge crowd for 660. And I got a beautiful photo from Brady Dyer, the city councillor. He was involved in getting a drone up there taking photos, and it's just a stunning photo of the big crowd at the Hutt Rec. with the harbour and Soames Island in the background as the sun sets. So, yeah, what I remember from the hut mostly was when the Queen turned up there in March 1970. I was 10, and the Queen, Prince Philip, and the young Prince Charles and Princess Anne, Prince Charles would have been 22, they all wandered around. There were thousands of school kids all sitting very well behaved in rows through the whole of the hut wreck, and the four royals would walk by the schools, and they were all allotted a school to talk to, you know. So we got Prince Philip. Prince Philip came down, and I was the smallest in the class, so I was up the front. And it's, you know, the classic lines, what school do you go to? Have you come far? You know, that kind of thing. There's a real thrill as a kid to, there's a beautiful shot of the Queen at the hut wreck with all those school kids that you can Google, but unfortunately it would have cost us quite a bit of money to use it. I like kind of connecting all these things together to really celebrate how vibrant our community was.
It's a very interesting place we ended the map tour. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, this came out of, I did a book on New Zealand music during the First World War called Goodbye Maori Land. And in that is the story of the German prisoners, the internees on Soames Island. Before the First World War, there were this curious thing going on around the world where German bands would, you know, so these are brass bands, were traveling the world, and they would stay in places for quite a long time, and they would busk, and then they'd get their name known around a community, and they'd get invited to play at, you know, garden fates and that kind of thing. And there was this band in Auckland that had just arrived shortly before the war, so they were all interned. So you had a self-contained band come light orchestra who were basically prisoners on Soames Island. So they entertained themselves and other prisoners by having regular concerts. And the Turnbull Library has got this wonderful photo of a German band playing in the outdoors on Soames Island, which I thought, well, there's a great way to end it, you know, this curiosity of history that's been completely forgotten, you know, but it all helps create the kind of musical, you know, soundscape of the Hutt Valley.
What's the role of audio culture in putting on a map like this?
For us, it's a way of, we want to cover the country. You know, things get so Auckland dominated with the record companies and the big population there. So it helps show the whole of the country how much their community has contributed to our musical life. It also is a way of showing people how much is on the website. We have about 2,500 pages now. And so if somebody gets interested in this because of the Lower Hutt music map, all the items on the map, and there's about 35, 40, there's quite a few links there to the stories elsewhere on the site, like the Steve Gilpin MySex story or the Shona Lang profile. You know, you can kind of, what we call, go down the rabbit hole and get totally immersed in it and work out how the site works, you know, just how much is there. And it's a way of really easing people into it, that's something really relevant to them.
So who is Audio Culture? What is that organisation?
We're run by a trust called the Digital Media Trust. We're a charitable trust, and our sister site was started first. That's called New Zealand On Screen, which is a website devoted to film and television history of New Zealand, where you can watch tens of thousands of videos of old television and film clips and full documentaries. When a friend of mine got the idea to do a music equivalent, New Zealand On Air thought, well, we'll put this under the umbrella with New Zealand On Screen so that we can share administration, and also there's a lot of synergy. We can embed anything musical that's already on New Zealand On Screen, and they've cleared all the rights for something like, you know, Ready to Roll from 1978 when Sharon O'Neill is in it, and it's a Record Awards, and they've got the full program there. I've added that to the map, you know, so, or music videos. There's a lot of cross-pollination between both of us. So we're funded by New Zealand On Air. It's a kind of annual funding we have to apply for. There's a very tiny percentage of what New Zealand On Air gives funding to, a very tiny percentage is devoted to archival activities. So this is a really good way of showing New Zealand's film, television and music history in a way that people can really interact with them. You know, it's not a dry thing. So New Zealand On Screen is used in schools a lot. There's a serious purpose to what we're showing, you know, as well as having like the Goodnight Kiwi theme there for, you know, in perpetuity. I can link that through audio culture to the guy who arranged that version, a guy called Bernie Allen, who's an old muso who was in the first rock and roll band to have a residency with Johnny Devlin. There's a serious purpose, which is New Zealand's social and cultural history is all being catered for in a way that's very accessible. You know, the idea of, now that we've got the wonderful resource of the internet, you know, we can make it really easy for people to see or hear all these things, whereas you used to have to go into the sound archive or film archive to hear any or see any of these things of the past, documentaries or, you know, old radio programs. We work in quite closely with Radio New Zealand and embed a lot of their programs so that they can be found easily when they're relevant to audio culture pages. It all helps get more ears and eyeballs onto this creative output that has come mostly through public broadcasting, you know, so it gives value to the taxpayer. Yep.
What are your hut connections there, Chris? You've sort of alluded to them quite a bit.
Yeah, well, my family moved to the hut in 1908 from Wellington after coming out from Ireland in the 1860s. My grandfather started a wool scouring business that my father and his brother continued from the 40s on to the 70s, a wool scouring works in Moira. And funnily enough, Moira makes an appearance there where Artie Shaw, the American band leader who came out here with the US Navy, he played on, you know, Hutt Park, where the golf course is, you know, just across the road from where the wool scour used to be. So, yeah, I'm very much Huttite, you know, and I was in Auckland for most of all the 90s. So, you know, when I came back, Lower Hutt had changed so much with the move to Queensgate. But that's, you know, and Petone having completely changed with the demise of the gear meet, you know, which totally dominated the environment in Petone. But it provided work for thousands and thousands of people, you know. It was a very vibrant community and still is, but it's changed, you know.
Certainly has changed. Now, you mentioned Graham White from Hatfield High School. Did you go to Hatfield High School yourself?
No, I went to St Bernard's Primary and then St Pat Silverstream.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and Waterloo School. Waterloo School is where I had primary. What I remember there is a kid coming into the class with a portable record player, and he said, oh, this is a record somebody over the back fence made, and it was Spinning, Spinning, Spinning by Simple Image. Three of them worked at Todd Motors, which is another, you know, hut industry that has gone elsewhere, and the kids just went crazy. He played it over and over again, and we were all just dancing through the lunch hour, you know, and it was just, it was really important to me to think that this is a hit record that just from over the back fence, you know, that was a key realization for me.
I could
What's next on the map program for the music maps?
I had hoped to. I had the perfect person in Upper Hutt, and I'm not going to name him, but he just bailed because he said I've retired. I don't have a computer anymore. But I've got to find the right person in Upper Hutt who's historically minded and can do research, and loves music. But meanwhile, I've got a huge map. They take a long time to put together. Because you've got to get the images, you've got to get the actual street address where these things once were but have now disappeared. There's whole streets that have disappeared. So in one that I'm working on at the moment on Hamilton, the centre of Hamilton has changed, and so a lot of it was similar to Lower Hutt in the way that there were so many venues for teenagers. So I'm working on Hamilton and Taranaki in combination with two writers who are from there, you know, and I kind of edit it and get it to the publication stage. So I think they're really, you know, they're really important as a way of opening up audio culture for new readers and just instilling pride, because in that same way that I never forgot that spinning, spinning, spinning came from Lower Hutt, or, you know, nature was from Upper Hutt, you know, or Shona Lang was, you know, taught by somebody I knew, you know. It gave a real sense of pride, and that this kind of creativity was possible in your own backyard. You know, when we were so inundated by music and film and television from Britain and the States when I was growing up, you know, it's very easy to the local stuff to get swamped.
That is brilliant. No, it was a really interesting read, and I'm really pleased that you reached out to us. Those are all my questions. Was there anything else that you want to add?
Oh, thanks, John. Look, if people can think of, they have a look at the map, and the way to find it is just to Google audio culture, one word, Lower Hutt music map, audio culture, Lower Hutt music map, they'll find it. And, you know, they might be able to think of locations that have a story behind them that I can add. You know, I'm happy to do that. That's the great thing about working in web publishing, is you can always add more and you can correct errors, you know. So I'm happy to hear from people.
Thank you.
And that was Audio Culture's Chris Burke and the Lower Hutt Music Map, now live on the internet and ready for your feedback and local musical additions. But sadly, that's our radio show for the week. Thanks to all my guests tonight, and a big thank you to you for listening to the show and supporting Wellington Access Radio. You can always listen again to the show as a podcast on the Hut Zone pages of accessradio.org.nz. If you have a suggestion of a Hut story or a piece of musical poetry, then please do message us either on Facebook, John McDonald NZ, or email the team, and our email is thehutzone@outlook.co.nz. Let's go out with some music from one of the musicians mentioned in the Music Map interview, Wellington Access Radio legend Eddie O'Strange. Here's his 1983 song, Video Dodo. Until next week, mate wā e noho oru mai rā. Stay well.
There's a new thing called the Video Dodo. It's a new dance and here's how it goes.
Dodo, video, dodo.
Take off your clothes, lie on your back, lay your hands down flat and a whack, whack, whack.
Dodo, video, video, dodo.
Whack, whack, whack.
Whack, whack, whack.
Whack, whack, whack.
Dodo, video, dodo. Dodo, video, dodo.
If you wanna learn how to do the dodo,
dodo, video, dodo.
Listen to me, cause here is how it goes.
Dodo, video, dodo.
Lie on your back like a chicken butt. Make like a duck run over by a truck. They come and they go, go.
Dodo, video, dodo.
Nothing amazes like the video, dodo.
Dodo, video, dodo.
Now up on your feet, pretend you're in the shower. What's going on? You've been here for a hour.
Dodo, video, dodo. Dodo, video, dodo.
Slap, slap, slap. Between your legs and sway to your bum. Like a kangaroo and jiggle your dojo.
Dodo, video, dodo.
Put your head down low, clap your hands behind your knees, stretch your roll on your back and scratch for me. There is no end to the video of dodo. There is no end to the video of dodo. There is no end to the video of dodo. There is no end to the video of dodo.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.